This is International Insights, conversations with experts and entrepreneurs on principles of management and leadership, produced by Dr. Joe Shkembri from the Faculty of Economics, Management and Accountancy.
Welcome to International Insights, stories from the real economy. My name is Joe Shkembri. Whether you run your own enterprise or work for someone else, you know that not all projects and clients are equally important. Some simply have more consequence than others. Maybe it's the complexity of a project, the fact that it's in a different country, or because it is a chance to demonstrate what we can do. The international growth of a company is usually marked by these strategic opportunities that trigger the company to take bolder steps and establish a clear vision. They are like tipping points, the key threshold beyond which the company's growth seems just like an appointment with destiny. In today's episode, we focus on these tipping points. Our guests have successfully led their companies to international growth, one opportunity at a time, but with key opportunities having a strategic impact on the organization and its direction. John DeGiorgio ran a company providing software solutions for airports until it was acquired by a group from New Zealand in 2017. On his part, Joseph Sultana started and grew a software company involved in complex systems development, a company which today is also part of a larger global software firm. John DeGiorgio, Joseph Sultana, thanks for accepting to share your insight with us.
Thank you.
Tell me first, John, I guess we'll start with you. Your international journey over time, looking back, what were the main milestones in that journey?
There were a series, some more minor than others, but if we were to look at the first particularly significant one was a service and product project for a customer based in Geneva and in London and also in Finland, where we had a particular technology which addressed a specific and very particular requirements that they had. And this was back in 1998.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, they're still clients of ours. And after that, we had a series of others which were much more product-led.
Okay. Okay.
So the development of a software product, which we'll probably have the opportunity to discuss some of those details around there. In 2001 and again in 2011, which led to specific international activities on a much larger scale.
Okay, so the journey was characterized in this sense by these opportunities that were kind of more important than the kind of the regular opportunities.
Yeah.
Joe, in your case, was the story kind of also characterized?
Similar, but different in that when we set up shop, John and I in 2003, the vision always was to deliver primarily services into an international marketplace, right? Because we felt that if you wanted to deliver software, the climate at that time at a local level was that you couldn't do it properly because it was never seen as a strategic choice. So it was always a fulfillment of a cost. Mm-hmm. So the mindset was more about how quickly and how cheaply can we do it. And the ambition we set off with at that point was, let's find the clients where we can really do our job properly, okay, where we can deliver software.
The right kind of client.
The right kind of client. Now, obviously, in hindsight, I realize there is no right kind of client, right? And it's more of a mindset that you're looking for. So the journey for us was already set out. And I think my life has, I have been blessed by meeting people who have been very pivotal. And rather than milestones, for me, it was always about coming across these individuals or group who steer me or steer the ship that I was driving in a particular direction,
okay,
right? And I find it quite fascinating that when you look back at the impact that these conversations have with these individuals, the real impact is so far-reaching that at that point you don't even realize.
Okay.
And for us, and for me in particular, I was believed in a theory, the lighthouse theory,
right,
which is what I call the lighthouse theory. And I try to spread this gospel. It's a bit obsessive, maybe, in that when you set off on a journey, knowing where you want to end up and making sure the decisions you take throughout that journey, because throughout that journey you're always going to have a tangential pull, right?
Right.
However, if you come across an opportunity and you map it against where you should be going, then you realize it's a very binary decision. Does this opportunity take me away from that lighthouse, or does it pull me towards that lighthouse?
Okay.
And I find that when you use that very, very simple methodology, mm-hmm. you are more likely to not commit very strategic mistakes in being pulled off course, trying to do something which, you know.
Okay. And I'm interrupting you just because this is really interesting, this lighthouse idea. But I guess in the beginning, in the early days of the journey, you probably met, you know, a person and a client that, you know, that kind of represented a degree of a strategic opportunity. And I guess there you did not have the direction set. What, relate a little bit, how did the first
happen? I mean, it is true, it is never very clear at the start, but you do have a basic understanding of where you want to go. So when we set off, and then I said, we want to break into the UK market, right? So that it is.
The direction was clear.
It's clear. It's clear why, because at that point we're about to join the European Union. This would give us freedom of movement. And to our eyes, maybe naively back then, we thought it would escalate us. A little bit in the eyes of the potential client. Our first client, yes, I remember we had taken a stand at an outsourcing exhibition, which at that point was co-sponsored by Moulton Enterprise. Mm-hmm. And again, they were quite pivotal for us, Moulton Enterprise, because they did give us the courage mm-hmm. to invest the money we needed to make. So we set up shop. The first client came. It was a telecommunications company
at that point,
a billing company. And with typical Maltese bravado, when they asked us, have you ever worked in telco? Of course, we invented telco, right? I mean, and we managed to land our first client.
Okay.
In hindsight, I can't really see how we managed to do that, because in reality, it was so easy to poke a finger through everything, yeah? But the individual and the organization, I think, felt, although we might not know anything about telecom, in fact, the truth was we had the resource and the skill set to deliver it. And bottom line, in the service business, that is what it is about.
Mm-hmm. You know? So we kind of stretched and took a risk.
Exactly.
Taking a project which is a bit beyond you.
Exactly.
You know? But it proved to be pivotal.
Exactly. And these risk-taking projects, I think, are part and parcel of any entrepreneurial journey, right?
Absolutely.
Because you cannot create the project and find the clients. You have to find the clients, and this will give you the experience and the industry knowledge to go in there, which comes with a significant amount of risk, but it's not such a big deal in reality, you know?
Exactly, especially if you see it in hindsight, you know, over time.
Exactly.
John, you had kind of your first international, you know, pivotal point, you know, with which kind of project?
Our story is a bit different to Joe, listening to Joe describing his, in the sense that what actually happened was we were working on a particular solution for a specific project for a customer here in Malta. And we were trying to find a technical solution to a challenge that that customer had. And we came up with a solution, which was a very valid solution. And at that stage, maybe the lighthouse that Joe spoke about blinked. Because at that particular point, it dawned on me that the type of solution that we were crafting for this particular project had universal applicability.
Okay.
So that particular approach could be put into a product independently of the solution that we were building for that customer, and could be created as a product and sold as a product. And because of the market nature, the only real major market for that product was international. So de facto, it pushed us to look down the international route. So it wasn't so much a customer that had a demand for us to do something and we built something for them.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously there was in the case of the project previously,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that was just the triggering of the idea. So I'm a firm believer in what is referred to as opportunity identification. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it really was one of those light bulb moments mm-hmm. to actually say, this we could turn into a product.
Okay.
And exactly the same thing happened with our second major okay. international product. So it was, I hope it doesn't sound arrogant to say, the vision of being able to identify that opportunity in at an international scale.
And it's always about identifying. Of course, my question to you is, how did you realize back then that, you know, turning this into a product, in fact, you know, constituted an opportunity with an international chance, if you like? You know?
Yeah, I think it was literally that light bulb going off, saying this could be created as a product, right. And if we did, then the potential demand and the market size opportunity for this product, and the industries in which it could operate, the geographies in which it could operate, were such that it was universal.
Okay.
So what we actually did at that stage was we redeveloped completely from scratch, because developing a project for a customer is a very different thing mm. to developing a product mm. for multiple customers, multilingual, multi-everything. So we redeveloped the product from scratch, having first obviously done some competitive analysis and a certain amount of marketing. Mm-hmm. We didn't create a business plan.
Okay. You went for it first and then?
We went for it for the simple reason that the gut feeling was very, very strong.
Okay.
We decided to make the investment in developing the product and the even greater investment in marketing the product.
Okay.
Because marketing costs more than product development in this particular case.
Yeah. What was the role of the client? You know, and the people on the client side to kind of help you realize that this could be an opportunity which is worth, you know, turning into a product and going out with it?
I don't think there was that input. Okay. The input from the clients evolved over time.
Okay.
As clients that we would be meeting would actually say to you, can the product solve this problem for me, or can it solve that problem for me? And therefore what you do is you identify these extra mm-hmm. capabilities that you could build into the project, mm-hmm. into the product rather. That itself is a major risk point.
Okay.
It's a risk point for the simple reason that you can be overly influenced by one particular customer's need.
All right.
And you go down the route of developing and investing into meeting that particular need without actually realizing that that is a need for one customer, but not necessarily so universal.
Exactly.
And therefore making the investment in product development just to meet that customer's need may not necessarily be the best strategic approach.
For the wider kind of project. Yeah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So you can actually invest and create excessive functionality, ironically, mm-hmm. into the product, which also then makes it more complex for people to understand
to be able to apply it widely.
That's a risk.
Yeah. One topic I want to, you know, discuss with you, John, for example, you've been essentially selling a solution to you know, airports for many, many years. In this journey we're discussing, how would you realize that, you know, this particular opportunity kind of is more important than others? It has a potential, you know, strategic significance for the company, and it's not like any other. You know, how do you kind of take that judgment?
In terms of one client project rather than another project?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned specifically the airport software that we had developed and launched in 2011 and then was acquired in 2017, which was very much our strategy for acquisition. That particular product and product area was quite challenging in the sense that, as was the case with the previous product, it was a world first.
Okay.
So we were going into develop a market that did not exist.
Exactly.
The software actually allowed airports to manage their retail and food and beverage revenues within the airport space. And previously, that was work which was being done very manually using Excel by even companies that had $2 billion worth of turnover. So we were creating a product sector that didn't exist. And that in itself is very challenging.
Of course, because you're selling an innovation which is not, you know, obvious out there. People are not used to it.
Correct. And also you're proposing a solution, a software-based solution, which will obviously cost money and will replace a solution that they're doing on Excel and therefore has no perceived cost. I use the word perceived cost because obviously people were taking much longer and not getting as good a quality of information using the Excel-based approach compared to what we were offering. Now, obviously, if you look at it like that, there was a clear correlation between the size of the airport and the value that our solution could provide to that airport. And therefore, certainly the larger the airport, the more attractive the opportunity was. But because our strategy was to go for acquisition, to build...
You knew this from day one, like...
Absolutely.
Before your lighthouse.
Yes, absolutely. And everything was, and I completely agree with Joe, you have to keep everything aligned with that vision. What we needed to do was we needed to create a product which was obviously of high quality, backed up by high service, but we needed to build a good reference list of customers. Because without a good reference list of customers, the attractiveness of the solution for an acquirer, and we had a story for the acquirer.
The credibility, of course.
Absolutely. So we were very keen to get those reference sites, and we had reference sites which ranged geographically and also in size. And therefore, that in itself was also part of the thinking.
But that's the strategy, kind of the proactive strategy from your end. But I guess when you were meeting different people, you were, I guess, taking a judgment. This project could be interesting. It's in an interesting geography. It's a large project, you know, and they were these milestones. How do you take that judgment that this is more important than others?
I think the most difficult judgment to make actually is a slightly different one, which is, are the people that I'm dealing with visionary enough to actually say, this is something that can change our business, their business. And if they are visionary, then you know you can work with them. So, for instance, I remember when we did our first soft launch of the product at a conference and an exhibition, that we did a lot of conferences and exhibitions. And as Joe was saying, we also used the services and the support provided by Trade Malta and Malta Enterprise prior to that. When we were actually doing that, there was a particular event at Heathrow where I was a speaker, and there was another speaker on the same panel as me who was the CIO of a very major airport. And we managed to build that relationship, and they actually purchased the product from us. It took a year because these are high ticket values you're talking about.
And the sales cycle is very long.
Correct. And so, you know, you have those people who are visionary
people
that you can...
Because
the value is very clear.
The same thing. You meet someone and...
But if I may jump into this, because we also had a product ourselves, right? But the story is very different. And now I'm hearing it, or I'm realizing where. So similar to yourself, we had a product in the postage space, which came about similar to your journey, where we met, we had a client in Malta who wanted that. And we then realized that this has potential because there aren't many suppliers to that industry, particularly the smaller English-speaking islands, right? Which at face value thinks it's a great idea. But when I look, and your question was, how do you decide which is the best opportunity to take? In hindsight, that was the wrong opportunity to take because, whereas in your case, Sean, you went after a market where the question which I should have asked was, is there money in that market? Do these guys, forget the value proposition for a second, but these guys actually have money to spend? I would have asked that, which we didn't. And although we enrolled 7-8 different countries with the product, there was no revenue uplift in reality because it's an industry which is dying.
Okay.
Right? So to your point, yeah. Which choice do you make when you have two products?
Kind of look at the industry in general. So you're saying postal services was a sunset industry anyway,
exactly.
Whereas airport revenue was a growing
exactly.
industry.
Exactly.
And therefore, it's easier to align with your lighthouse.
Exactly.
Because
no, I'm not saying it didn't add value to us, mm-hmm. that, just to mm-hmm. be clear, because mm-hmm. it gave us huge exposure yeah. in supporting, you know, a 99.99% uplift uptime product. So a lot of value there. But the choices, for example, you went from 2011 to 2017, which is a short span of time.
Exactly.
I mean, yes. with our product, we did it since 2003, and mm-hmm. we've never actually managed to form. So the focus, the lighthouse, saying this is the industry we're going. You can see the differences in success.
The opportunities are yeah. grounded in an industry.
Exactly, yeah. exactly.
But how do you ensure your company, you know, beyond you, if you like, you know, has the same sensitivity, the capability to develop good opportunities, important opportunities? How do you build a structure for that?
I think, again, come back to the lighthouse, right? What do you want to be? So if what you want to be is a good services-based company, you know, with a geographical spread, etc., etc., then the concept of entrepreneurship to a degree is no longer necessary. Why? Because you've established the market you want to be. Now it's process. Right now, how do you scale
okay.
to keep that vision going?
Okay.
Right? And to a degree, in my particular case, my role within the organization is now completely non-operational.
Okay.
Right? Why? Because when you get to a certain size, then it is much more difficult to take the kind of risks you would take
okay,
when you are a smaller organization, right?
So the entrepreneurship becomes less important and the process becomes more important.
Becomes hugely more important because you're going to scale, you have a lighthouse to grow the business and sell it. So we have to get there, and we have to get there in a way where when the buyer comes, our back-end process, our scalability is so strong
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that he cannot poke fingers through it. So it's a different skill set. The skill set now is let's build it strong.
Exactly.
Right? So it can take the punishment, which effectively means you then need to move sideways and use your entrepreneurial skills, you know, in other areas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
And grow new kind of
exactly,
avenues.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
I actually think if you have too much entrepreneurship
okay.
in a very solid kind of business, it will tear it apart.
Okay.
Because it will take you away from your life. I'm going to create this app.
Exactly.
And off you go on your horse.
You can't be a startup and be a large company.
You cannot.
You agree with this, John?
Well, Joe's business and his sector, although we're both in the IT sector, we're very different. We do very different things. So we strategically took a decision over 20 years ago to become a software products mm-hmm. company rather than a software services
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
company, as Joe's company is. So that in itself makes puts us in very different, situations. Obviously, process is absolutely important always. But the main point is the ability to identify those opportunities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Different people stand at the top of a mountain
mm-hmm.
and they look out on a landscape
okay.
and different people are seeing different things in that same landscape.
Mm-hmm.
And what you've got to do is hone, or I believe at least, you've got to hone the skills of people to be able to identify those things in that landscape that have that core from which you can develop the value. The value for the customer and the value for the business itself, and those should always be aligned. And if you ask, how do you teach that? I'm not sure you can, to
okay.
be honest.
Okay.
I think it's something that some people have and some people
right.
Don't, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But it's important to have a good mix of people within the business who have that ability to identify those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a strong believer in niche
okay.
opportunities,
mm-hmm.
Particularly because we come from companies which are small in the overall scheme of things internationally. It's very important, I believe, to actually operate within niche markets.
Sorry.
All our products, like the airport industry, mm-hmm. is a niche.
It's a niche.
They have their own
global niche in the sense.
Correct. They have their own exhibitions. They have their own mm-hmm. trade magazines. They have conferences
exactly.
which are going, which you can
yeah.
utilize as your marketing channel.
So kind of the network is closed, even though it's a global network.
It's more of a sort of laser approach rather than shotgun
absolutely.
Approach.
Absolutely.
And I think that That's worked well for us.
Exactly. Listen, this is really interesting and exciting. We're kind of chasing, or time is chasing us in this sense, but I'll give you time for, you know, one word of advice for a company out there interested in internationalizing, given the journeys and how successful you were in your case. You know, what's your, you know, bottom line or one word or one, you know, sentence of advice?
I would go with what I started with, right? Lighthouse, laser focus on where you're going, and don't let anything distract you. Bill Maldi, I think the best way to put it, Tarash Kabir. Right? So if you're going to go international, try and seven countries. Exactly. You know, just one, pick one choice. That's the lighthouse. Doesn't mean you cannot stop and validate where you are.
Yeah.
Right? And pivot if you need to, but keep that, because that is also really important for the people in the engine room. Right, who want to understand the vision of where you're
going. Where the thing is going.
Because if you don't, it's never going to work.
Absolutely.
That would be it for me.
Joe, thanks.
I would say that don't underestimate the amount of effort and marketing that you need to, and money rather, that you need to put into marketing and promotion to reach your market and to be credible, not appear credible, but be credible. You have to actually project the right image. You need to invest in that area. And be careful, I would say, of very small steps, hoping that it will go well, and then you'll invest in the marketing. At the same time, don't make the giant steps.
Exactly.
So you have to get the pace.
The balance.
The pace right.
Right.
Absolutely. I think, and the niche helps in that.
Joseph, John, thanks for sharing your experience on International Insights. That was Joseph Sultana and John DeGiorgio on how their companies grew thanks to some strategic opportunities.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
In this series, we talk to experts and entrepreneurs on leadership and management issues. We have episodes on emerging out of a crisis, driving innovation, the digital imperative, attracting talent, seizing key opportunities, and the leadership lessons we can learn from the world of sport. The series also includes 4 interviews with international entrepreneurs based in Malta. International Insights was originally recorded for Trade Malta and made possible thanks to HSBC.